There's more good news about Pennsylvania's breeding program. Last year, the number of state-bred live foals rose by nearly 30%. Many other states saw a drop of between 10 and 20%. This says that Pennsylvania truly has North America's fastest growing and most lucrative breeding program. And unlike some other states, our Racehorse Development Fund can only be used to support Pennsylvania breeding and racing. This is Brian Sanfratello. Please visit us at PABred.com.
Why is accreditation important in aftercare? The Thoroughbred Aftercare Alliance's standard of accreditation and grant process provide donors with confidence that their contributions are allocated in the most effective manner. TAA accreditation is only awarded after a complete review of an organization. Aftercare cannot be an afterthought for the industry. To learn more or support the TAA's mission, visit thoroughbredaftercare.org.
Learn the business of horses in the world's only accredited equine business program, the University of Louisville Equine Business Program. The University of Louisville has a legacy of excellence for more than 25 years of equine business education. Classes are taught by industry experts in state-of-the-art facilities located in the heartland of America's equine industry. The University of Louisville Equine Business Program. When it comes to horses, we mean business. For more information, visit business.louisville.edu/equine.
Now, back to At the Races with Steve Vick on Sirius XM Radio.
You say you stand by your man. Tell me something I don't understand. You said you love me, and that's a fact. And then you left me, said you felt trapped. Well, some things you can't explain away. But the heartaches in me feel this day. And stand by me.
We're back at the races, 25 plus into the get-together, and we had a terrific hour with Paul Matisse and got a bunch of coverage and recapping from Breeders' Cup. We got a bunch of recapping to do with Tony, 2 weeks' worth, including going back to his latest win, because now he's a regular, now he's taking calls again, and he's winning left and right, and he's already, so far this year, 13 starts, 2 wins, 2 seconds, 4 thirds, he's putting up big numbers, he's going after a riding title, going for a riding title amongst the 60-year-old jocks. Great job, Tony. Lendar gets you your second win of the year.
It's 60-plus-year-old jocks. We're going to very shortly be into that 70 category. But, yeah, she ran really good. And Richie Vega has been left. I get on horses for him. In fact, you know what? I breezed 5 this morning. And probably might ride one of them, but I don't know his name. But I breezed a couple that I might ride in the next few weeks, maybe in the middle of the month. And Richie's real good to me. He lets me pick one. If I say, oh, I like this horse, Rich, can I ride him? And I said, you don't mind if you put an old jock on him? He says, don't worry about it. I put you on him. But so he's good like that. He lets me pick here and there. And I'm really enjoying it. Like I said, I breezed 5, breezed one with 2 other horses, breezed another one with another horse, breezed my favorite filly, Collegeville Girl, breezed her. She's getting ready to run sometime in New York, the middle to the end of the month, and I think she'll come back running after her minor injury at Saratoga in the gate, and I've even schooled her a few times in the gate. She stands beautiful. She's such a sweet, intelligent filly. She's my favorite horse to get on every morning. But, yeah, Breeders' Cup, you had such a good program on. I'm so glad I didn't come on because I had nothing that I could offer after the professional handicappers that you had on and the people that have really a good opinion. And jocks are the worst handicappers in the world, you know. Like, I really liked Monomoy Girl because I thought, you know, that. But who didn't like her? And the other horse I really liked was West Coast, but I kind of didn't run his race that particular day. And I was even surprised. I says, man, Mike Smith over West Coast, and I would have picked West Coast over McKenzie, and neither one of them really rocked anybody's world that particular day. But Breeders' Cup was interesting. I watched some of the races, didn't watch some of them. I listened to your program, and your program had so much to offer. You know, the guys and the girls that you had on were so professional. Like I said, I was glad that I didn't come on because I had nothing to offer when it came to the particular people that you had on.
Well, I appreciate it, Tony, and I didn't mean to, you know, we just got lost a little bit, and then when I was trying to reach on that Thursday before, and we kind of blew the turn, too, and
It wasn't blowing the turn. It was really quality programs, and I was going to even ask you, Steve, please, don't put me on. I'll only sound stupid after these people. So you saved me, Steve. I really appreciate it. Honestly, it was great programming. And, of course, man, what great racing we had. You know, you couldn't ask for anything better than what we had. And I got a chance to watch some of them and didn't get a chance to watch all of them. And, you know, it's such a great time of year when you see the best horses in the country. And it just goes to show you there's a lot of them out there. I mean, we didn't have any short fields, you know, short fields. We had some full fields and competitive racing and competitive rides, you know, and you got to give the jocks credit. I mean, a lot of money on the line when you're racing for million-dollar purses. And guys did competitive, but basically competitive clean jobs, you know. And, you know, riders, you know, they respond, of course, to good horses and to big purses. But there was a lot of good racing, a lot of good race riding out there, and none of it really crossed the line. So that's refreshing to see how professional jockeys really can be, even when you're talking about big, big money.
A couple of things, Tony, that might have, you know, that obviously have some connection to you, and that includes Paco Lopez, you know, getting his first Breeders' Cup win, and got to be happy for Paco. He had, I think, 9 starts before this, and you could tell he was tickled, and it was nice for him to land on a horse like that.
Yeah, and you know what? He's a real competitor. You know, he rides Monmouth and pops in the parks here and there over the last few years. I've ridden somewhat with him and against him. You know, not a lot because, of course, I was phasing out when he was really getting popular in this area. But he's a real hard, competitive rider. And he's learned to control that competitive attitude. I think in the very beginning, you know, at times he would almost cross the line or he would overdo the style that he has. You know, he almost at times I saw riders would want to stay out of his way because he could really sometimes even almost cross the line or cross the line. But I was glad to see him win and he handled it with style and class and grace, and you can't ask for anything more than to win a race like he won. We saw some trainers that broke through. You know, it was also rewarding to see John Service, who's had good experience winning a Derby and a Preakness, you know, with Smarty Jones, but went there with a horse called Jaywalk, and we've watched her train here, and she's trained real well. And he won that division. In fact, I finished second to her one day with a maiden of Cynthia Reese's, a Jersey bred. And she, you know, she just played and went one easy. And I thought, man, what an impress. Because Cynthia's horse was, you know, she's a competitive Jersey bred. You know, she had ridden the whole family, your pals, forever pals, my pal, always pals, every kind of pal horse they had that Cynthia named. And they're all from the same family, and it's a Jersey bred. And she finished second, and Jaywalk just played with her and blew her away. But it was nice to see Jaywalk develop into the horse that she looked like she could be when she broke her maiden. And, of course, she proved herself Breeders' Cup Day. And, you know, it's always good to see some of the horses that ran out of parks, what ran competitive. And, you know, and honestly, at times, you know, parks stabled horsemen and trainers, owners, breeders don't get the credit that they deserve because, you know, Parks hasn't been a premier racing place. It's nothing that, you know, it's never been considered a New York or a California, and believe me, there's not too many places that will be considered a New York, California, Gulfstream, or Churchill. But it was nice to see some horses show up out of Parks, and of course, it was nice to see Services horse Jaywalk win.
Yeah, and you, of course, also had Louis Carvajal in with Imperial Hint, who, you know, Tony, not sure if they, you know, if they thought that that rating, you know, knowing the Promises Fulfilled was going to bust for the lead, whether that was part of the design, but it at no point really did Imperial Hint look like he was in a position to succeed, and I that was you know, not that a board hit again isn't a nice result, but I kind of wonder if they would rethink the approach going forward. I didn't get a chance to see Louis after the race.
Sometimes you look at it and you say sometimes over-strategizing and not doing what maybe your horse does its best at doing, you take away that strong point because the strategy of the race is to rate or to do something different. And that could be an example of over-strategizing. But then we look at, you know, a horse like Accelerate, who looked like he could do anything in that group in the early stages of the race, and sat there, you know, and went on about his business when it was time to go on about his business in the Classic. And people were thinking, oh, the mile and a quarter, or this horse, can he go this far? He's maybe not a true a mile and a quarter distance horse or whatever. And he proved to everybody he can do whatever is asked of him. And he, you know, I'm sure there was some strategy that was talked about in that race. But sometimes, you know, trainers and jockeys get to looking at things, and if they over-strategize, sometimes they take their horse's strongest way of running away from the horse. And most of the time, when you over-strategize, so much of the time you pay the price, and your horse doesn't get to run his absolute best race. But that's always after the fact, and it's always easier to analyze afterwards than it is beforehand. But when riders ride races and they stop riding according to what they feel and their sensation of what's going on at that particular moment, and they don't respond to what they feel and the sensation that goes through them, their thinking, their body, and the way they're communicating with the horse, when you don't sometimes respond in a positive way to that sensation and feel, sometimes that's a good example of over-strategizing and not doing what's best for the horse. Whenever I tried to do something that was strictly, not all the time, but on many occasions, you know, I come back from a race and I tried to follow specific instructions, and they didn't feel like it was the right thing to do, very rarely did you overcome and have a successful outing. You know, many of the time when you follow through with what you're feeling and seeing and what's happening around you, and you respond to it the way you have the experience to respond to it, you usually wind up with a better performance. But, you know, that's worse racing.
Well, overall, Tony, any other observations and thoughts from the weekend?
Nothing that is going to be real beneficial to any of our listeners. It was just a great weekend, and it was great to see the riders and, like I said, the great horses go out there and perform, and so many of them performed up to expectations. And, of course, in horse racing, you're going to have disappointments, you know. And you're going to have people that go out there and, you know, they're ambitious, but they've been ambitious and maybe placing their horses along the way. Look at all the positive press that one of our trainers from Parks got when we looked at it. And I was glad just to see him out there because he's a hard worker. Uriah St. Louis. And, you know, he's been accused of being very ambitious and placing that horse right along. Discreet Lover. That's Discreet Lover, right? Uriah,
yeah.
St. Louis.
Yeah.
And you know what? If he would have responded to all that talk about, yo, you're being, you know, you're wasting this horse, and you're, well, you're too ambitious in placing him. He'd have never got some of the wins that he got with that horse, and of course he wouldn't be in Breeders' Cup. So I give him credit for following through with his, you know, feel and his plan to run the horse in the Breeders' Cup. And if you ever saw a guy that gets out there every morning and, you know, family operation and shows up every day, sometimes had success, some never really had tremendous success, but always been out there working, whether he's winning or he ain't winning, you know, I was glad to see him get some national coverage. It's refreshing. And it was refreshing that he could mention, guess what? I'm from Parks. And, you know, I can't say it enough, that racehorse development fund that has been given to the thoroughbred breeders and owners and trainers, the money that is available to them, they've utilized it efficiently and effectively. And we have a lot of PA breds and a lot of horse population at Parks that's worthy of talking about. You know, it's improved the caliber of horse that races in different places in the country that come out of Parks, and it's improved the racing at Parks. You know, I only hope that the Parks, the management, can do as much as possible to advertise and to put the sport out there in front of the public and give it all the positive promotion that they can. That's what I hope for.
Absolutely. Tony, I also wanted to run by you any dealings over the years with Willard Thompson, who, of course, we lost on Saturday.
Yeah, you know, I wrote for Willard, wrote for his son, Glenn, and, you know, I wasn't real aware that he was dealing with health issues, but he was a good guy to ride for. You know, I can remember when he had maybe the jock had the bug, too, but I know he was with him. Herbie McCauley, I think, was with him when he first started riding. You know, and he's had young riders at his barn, and he was the kind of guy that tried to teach you, you know, if you were willing to learn. And, you know, he had his success as a trainer and won his share training titles in New Jersey. He was always someone who showed up at Monmouth Park, Garden State, Atlantic City, and you knew he was there, always had a bunch of horses. His son went to training horses. I've ridden for both of them. But I was always, you know, in Pennsylvania, and I'd only go to New Jersey here and there. But he was a good guy, and he was a guy that would take someone and teach him. You know, he was the kind of guy that if you were willing to listen and learn, whether it be a rider or as a trainer, he was willing to give you a shot and willing to teach you what he knew about the trade. And like I said, he had a lot of success in Jersey. He was multiple times a leading trainer and won many a race. And I know I won races for him, but I can't at this particular time remember the horses. But everybody knew Willard, and he was a nice guy to be around. You know,
it's no doubt.
He'll be missed. He'll be missed. He will be, you know. And, and you know, we've had so many people pass in the last couple years, and it just shows, you know, the face of the game changes. And the one thing about it, the people pass, but the game goes on, and it's a great game.
No doubt. Well, and his name in the PP's been a long, long time, and you know, even though he's been ill here in the last few years, was still sending him out. Widely respected, Willard Thompson. I knew Tony. You'd have had some winners for him.
He was one of those Jersey people that he was a figurehead in New Jersey. And yeah, you know, like I said, his son trained, Willard trained, and I remember, I think it was Herbie McCauley that was with him when he first came around, but I'm not sure. For some reason, I think it was Herbie.
I'll check with Herbie.
I think he was, or else I got him mixed up. You know, I hit the ground a lot. Like I always use as an excuse when I say the wrong thing. You know, Steve, I had a lot of concussions. So that's always a built-in excuse. It works
exactly
with Kylie, too.
Exactly.
It works with Kylie when I forget to do something.
You forgot to pick up the groceries or the dry cleaning or whatever it is.
I had a lot of concussions, you know.
Tony, I appreciate it, and good to catch up. We'll look forward to the next call, and gonna make sure everybody's on this one. You've been sneaking them in on us. These two wins, you kind of you got the pork chop past the bloodhounds.
And you know what? I even told the bus driver, and I was at a town meeting, and I told the mayor, and I said, you know, I hate to give you a horse, Mayor Teague, that doesn't win, but I think I can win this race I ride on Saturday, and I hope you respond positively to my requests in the town, but I guess if he doesn't win, you won't. I saw the mayor in the Halloween parade, and I said, hey, mayor, that horse won. He says, yeah, I know, but we didn't bet on him. What'd he pay? I said, $16. He said he was one of the favorites. I say, paid $16, mayor. Now, do you still remember what I was requesting? He says, what did you talk about at the town meeting? I says, oh, geez. See that?
Good job.
But I voted for him anyway.
$16, 7-1. Good job, Tony. Tony, thanks, buddy. We'll talk next week.
You take care, Steve. Bye now. Keep up the good work, and it's always a pleasure. Bye.
Thanks, buddy. Tony Black, folks. Let's take a break. Exactly 15 to the top. Get Steve Haskin in here and get Steve's reaction to Breeders' Cup and he's been banging out responses the last, literally since Saturday night. So we'll get some thoughts from Steve next. Stay with us.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Vick on Sirius XM Radio.
There are places where being who you are is a punishable offense. These places have many names, but the ones who flee have one. Refugee. And it is in the name of the refugee that Hyas has dedicated itself for the last 130 years. Created in the name of the Jewish people, 4.5 million rescued and resettled so far. When they said, give us your tired, your poor, your huddled masses yearning to breathe free. We were the ones at the docks helping them breathe free. Only now it's a farmer from Darfur, a shop owner from Syria, a family from Ukraine, a child from Colombia, a Christian from Iran, a gay man from Uganda. The 65 million souls who still wander the earth in search of sanctuary. Maybe it's because being Jewish means you don't have to be reminded never to forget. Hias, for the refugee.
Visit HIAS.org to understand the mission and support the work of Hias.
Why is accreditation important in aftercare? The Thoroughbred Aftercare Alliance's standard of accreditation and grant process provide donors with confidence that their contributions are allocated in the most effective manner. TAA accreditation is only awarded after a complete review of an organization. Aftercare cannot be an afterthought for the industry. To learn more or support the TAA's mission, visit thoroughbredaftercare.org.
Do you want unlimited access to handicapping without exorbitant prices? Then BridgeNet.com has you covered with a variety of plans for past performances, pedigree, and raw data. The BridgeNet.com Performance Plan offers unlimited PDF past performances for just $75 per month and is available at BridgeNet.com/PP. American Produce Records Online puts the pedigrees of nearly 1 million dams and more than 2 million foals at your fingertips, plus sire stats, for only $275 per year and is available at BridgeNet.com/APR. The BridgeNet.com data plan offers unlimited access to race day data files, perfect for handicappers with their own database or to plug into other people's programs. The data plan is just $125 per month. Visit BridgeNet.com for all this information and more, and discover why BridgeNet.com is the handicapper's edge.
Horsebills.com is a cost-effective, time-saving, paperless revolution. Vendors are able to generate electronic invoices for owners and other vendors who can pay through Horsebills.com for just 50 cents. Turn hours of work into minutes with our easy-to-use site. Have our team take over your bookkeeping or continue to do it yourself and pay only our low monthly subscription fee. Check out our video tutorial on the Horsebills.com YouTube channel and get started today for free. Horsebills.com. Toll-free number 888-938-4643.
Breaking down the biggest stories in the world of horse racing, this is At the Races with Steve Vick on Sirius XM Radio.
I can't stop shaking. The room has a groove and the floor is almost earthquaking. Look what we're making. History out on the floor and it's just awaking. So get that needle in the core. Scratch that back and give me more. You know exactly what I came here for. Back it up and do it again. From the middle to the top to the end.
We're back at the races, 10 minutes to the top of the hour, and Steve Haskins post Breeders' Cup thoughts coming at us right now. Steve, good morning.
Good morning, Steve. How are you?
Excellent, excellent. Really nice week. Really nice weekend. Churchill Downs.
I'm sure you had a wonderful time with beautiful weather.
Yeah. It was beautiful.
Race day, Saturday was nice.
Yeah,
that's all that counts. Saturday,
exactly.
Wasn't too bad. It looked like it was cloudy. That's about it. So
it was all right. It worked out fine, and the results. You know, the results. they speak for themselves. I mean, there's something really pleasurable about. You know, the 2 days, no matter what happens, and there's always great stories, but, you know, to have a horse like Enable come and succeed. I mean, that, you know, we've had horses like Enable, you know, these big, arc winners and so forth, Steve, that have come. And I don't, you know, I'm not trying to grab the headlines for you, but, you know, I know how much you enjoy that as one of the prime pieces of the Breeders' Cup. Your impressions coming out of the weekend?
Well, I would say Enable definitely was the highlight. It was the one race you could actually call historic. I think that people are going to remember years from now. I mean, to win the Arc and the Breeders' Cup turf, first horse to do it, you know, was a tremendous accomplishment. And the way she did it too, and also hats off to Magical, you know, for her to run in the Arc, then come back and run the Champions Fillies race, both races in October, and then come back 2 weeks later, and run her guts out like that against a filly like Enable, and I mean, when you get two fillies like that, that not only run 1-2 in the turf, they finish nine. I mean, whether you see horses, I mean, there were two unbelievable margins between second and third in turf races over the weekend. But, I mean, you never see gaps of a nine lengths after the first two horses. I think part of it is the fact that these are two tremendous fillies and the fact that, I mean, our turf horses are just bad. I mean, we just have just a terrible group of turf horses. You know, we've had so many different winners and nobody can sustain anything. But I mean, for her to come here, third start of the year, first of all, for her to win the Arc off of one synthetic race all year, it's unheard of. And, you know, she had a tough race and she comes back here, has another tough race and just guts it out. I just think it was, I think she got a great ride staying out into the middle of the course. So, I mean, all in all, I mean, that to me was, you know, the most memorable race of the Breeders' Cup. That's the one people will be talking about years from now.
Agreed. And in the aftermath, I mean, it was the moment that, you know, I think there were some there were some personal moments, and particularly for John Sadler and for Costa Aronis and the Accelerate win in the Classic. You know, there's you know, and the Breeders' Cup Classic always stands up you know, over the years, but the Enable, her coming was the central story, and her succeeding. I agree. I mean, that's what I came away with too. I mean, that's what I was thinking about as we drove out of Louisville Saturday night.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, listen, as far as the Breeders' Cup goes, I mean, it was probably one of the most formful Breeders' Cups we've ever seen. And the fact that, all the horses came back sound, which is fantastic. I mean, there were no major incidents. And that's the case with the Derby every year. I mean, you just don't see horses, you know, getting seriously injured in the Derby, despite 20 horses. Everybody complains about 20 horses. Nobody ever gets hurt in a race. I mean, some, you know, there were some years where you get, you know, horses jostled about, and you did hear in the Classic, you know, in the start of the race. But all in all, the races were clean. Horses came back sound, and they were formful. I mean, it was only one huge bomb. You know, you like a little mix, especially me, who doesn't bet favorites at all. So, you know, I was just, you know, just bet long shots and hope a few of them come in. I just don't have the resources to start monkeying around with, you know, trifectas and, you know, $50 exact part wheels and superfect. I just don't have the funds for that. So yeah, after a while, you just go crazy trying to figure out how to bet, because I always wind up making the wrong bet. So I went mostly with win this year, you know, with a few exotic bets. And, you know, my big dilemma in the race is whether it's worth it to drive back to Freehold Raceway for the amount of gas it'll take to collect my $12. So that's about all. And three of those $12 were on the scratch of Wilson Slew, who I had back-ended in several exactas. But, yeah. No, I mean, races were very formful. But what happens when you get formful races like that? People have a tendency, you know, over the years, to just look back and say, oh yeah, that was a good Breeders' Cup. I mean, but nothing that sticks out other than the the Enable race. Again, we don't know what these 2-year-olds are going to turn into, so we can't say how memorable the 2-year-old races are until we see how good the winners are. I think we saw some extraordinary performances by some very, very good horses. Newspaper of Record was just incredible. I thought Jaywalk, the thing that impressed me with Jaywalk is the field she beat. I mean, there were five really, really good horses in there that looked like they all had a tremendous shot to win, and she just dusted them. I mean, she just won that race very easily. And, you know, watching the race with Joan for the juvenile, going by the stands the first time and into the first turn, I told her, Kingwin is going to be a very good horse to win this race, being as far back as he was and as wide as he was. Sort of reminded me of the race that Nyquist ran in the Breeders' Cup Juvenile, where he got parked wide and just ran the whole race wide and wound up winning going away. But I thought he was very, very impressive. You know, it's too bad we lost, you know, Code of Honor was scratched. I thought he was going to be a major player in there. But, I mean, all in all, you've got to give credit to Nick Sko. You know, everybody completely discounted.
Yep.
His race in Breeders' Futurity, like it didn't exist, you know, with the odds he went off at. And everybody said, oh, that was a total fluke. And then, it's a 3/16 pole. It said, oh, my God, this horse is going to do it again.
Yep.
So he ran a tremendous race.
Yep. I agree. And it's funny, Ben Colbrick was laughing to himself when he came down to, you know, to meet him when the horse came back. And you know, it's apparently because of the Korean association with the horse, the ownership, they are calling him K Nix Go. The
yes,
K is.
Right. I heard that originally.
Yeah.
I heard that originally because he it actually had to do with Nix. I mean, the N-I-C-K.
Right.
S, that, the nicking, and had nothing to do with the basketball. And that
no.
He names all his horses with a K, So it was K Nix. So, I mean, he's always going to be known as Nix, as in New York Nix. But that's what I heard originally when he won the Breeders' Futurity. I heard that that has nothing to do with the New York Nix.
It's going to be it's going to be interesting to see what happens, because that was a performance that then, you know, it gives Colebrook every opportunity to, you know, to start down a trail. And he was funny, Colebrook. He said he's confident Baffert's not showing up at Tampa, which is where Ben will spend the winter.
Yeah, right. He might have that one wrapped up
to himself.
You know,
yeah.
Somebody like him has got to be saying to himself, "Oh, Baffert, come on, give me a break. I mean, what am I going to do? You know, I mean, I can't get a break. I got to race one. Who do I get beat by? Of course, Baffert again." You know, the assembly line keeps churning about year after year.
Well, and didn't you, I think, going back to Thursday when you and Lenny were together, didn't you make a little push for Signalman as worth using, right? You liked Signalman a little.
I thought you know, go back and watch his race in the Breeders' Futurity. Watch him get slammed at the quarter pole and almost get put into the rail, and he just bounced right back and ran a tremendous race. And I was really happy, because, like I said, I remember, you know, standing out by the Oklahoma one morning, you know, talking to Kenny, who's out there every morning, and telling me about Signalman. And this was before he broke his maiden. He said, "I tell you, this horse, he's by General Quarters. He has no pedigree. But I'm telling you, this horse is a runner." And then he breaks his maiden by a nose. And, you know, it was good. But he didn't look anything special. But then the race, he runs into Breeders' Futurity. And then here, you know, he's running down on the inside, running with those two horses at the wire. I mean, he's definitely a horse to look out for. So he's a tough horse. And Kenny's had a tremendous year. I mean, people realize. I mean, Restless Rider looks good, and then, you know, of course, he wins with Eskimo Kisses. I mean, and he definitely has a Derby horse for next year. I mean, General Quarters is a horse that definitely you would think his horse is going to want to go far. So yeah, I mean, that was an excellent performance, I thought. How did you make out all along?
Decent. I made a little bit, you always feel, unless you really, you know, if you get everything wrong, that's, you know, it's one thing, and you just sort of, you know, you just turn the page. It's almost worse to you know, just make a little bit, and you put all the work in, and you had good opinions and ideas. Basically traded a lot of dollars on the multis, hit the multis both days, and the late pick four and pick five. And they weren't bonanzas. You know, you hit those, you want to make $2,500, $3,500 for, you know, for your effort. But there were two returns. The reverse tri-key that we talk about so often, singling Enable and keying off Enable, I just kept telling everybody, for all it was worth, that Sadler's Joy was going to like it at Churchill. It was a configuration that was to his advantage, that would play to his strength. And I pretty much, my entire Breeders' Cup ended up being through the triple in the turf. That was
good. What was he, 37 yeah. to 1, I think? Something like
37
that?
37 to 1, yeah.
Yeah. Wow, I know. That's that was a good one.
That's all it takes.
Is, by the way, you look at pick fours and, like, the last four. I mean, you certainly could have had all four of those winners. You know, even, I mean, you look at Expert Eye. How many times, by the way, maybe it's just my imagination, how many times has Michael Stout come here with one horse and wins? I mean, it seems like he so often he comes with one horse and wins with that one horse. I mean, his percentage in the Breeders' Cup has got to be incredibly good. It just seemed like all his horses are all these hard knocking horses like Conduit and all these kind of horses that just they're just hard knocking horses, and they always run big. You know, and then listen, or you know, you have Montemoy Girl, what a great filly she is, I'll tell you. And then Enable and Accelerate. I mean, certainly very formful pick four there.
A lot of good results, and you know, the atmosphere was good. I saw so many people it's a gathering in that regard. You know, there's certain stopovers over the course of the year, whether it's the Triple Crown season and then into the Saratoga portion, at least for us on the East Coast, Del Mar for people on the West Coast, and then Breeders' Cup. It's a great industry gathering, and it did. I will say, Steve, as I brought up with Lenny and you on, and really in a lot of conversations, it was a subdued affair. For whatever the contributing factors were, it had a very, I mean, it was nice. It's fine.
Yeah,
I don't mind that.
It was a good day of racing. You know, but, to me, one of my favorite statistics is the fact that for the first time ever in the Breeders' Cup history, we had three horses from the same crop win the Breeders' Cup Classic. I mean, that's never happened before.
Interesting.
I led my column with that because I found, yeah. and the thing I found fascinating was that, you know, we had Gun Runner, obviously, and he was the one horse that ran in the Derby that year. But you know, you go back to that crop and you start looking at horses like Nyquist, retired, after the Pennsylvania Derby. Exaggerator, retired after the Pennsylvania Derby. Brody's Cause, was retired after the Belmont Stakes. You know, he had won the Bluegrass, Outwork, the Wood Memorial winner, was retired after the Derby. Creator won the Belmont Stakes and the Arkansas Derby. He was retired after the Travers. None of these horses made it. It looked like everybody's saying, oh, this is a terrible crop. I mean, there's nobody left in there. But I pointed to one race on April 17th. April 17th, during the Derby, this was like right around the time when Gunrunner, right after Gunrunner had won the Louisiana Derby. The horse I just mentioned were the big Derby horses. On April 17th, there was a maiden race run at Los Alamitos, and the winner in the race was a horse called Westbrook, who won only one more race in his career for a $50,000 claiming tag. Finishing second in that race was a first-time starter named Accelerate. Hmm. And finishing a neck farther back in third was another first-time starter named Arrogate. So, I mean, whoever thought, by the way, that at that point, I thought Gunrunner had beaten questionable competition, and I think I had him ranked eighth in my Derby dozen, even after he won the Louisiana Derby. But who thought, by the way, after this maiden race, when two horses get beaten in the maiden race and Gunrunner, that those three horses would all go on to win three consecutive runnings of the Breeders' Cup Classic, and wind up earning, get this, they won, the three horses wind up earning $39.2 million among them. I mean, you just don't know. You just don't know, you know, where and when these horses are going to come from. But I just found that fascinating, that first crop ever to produce three Breeders' Cup Classic winners.
That is. That's a cool aside out of it. And this horse, I guess I have to ask you the loaded question, Steve.
Horse of the year.
Yeah, this horse of the year debate is going to be very difficult.
It's tough. I mean, you know, you can make a case for both horses, and the thing is, you know, Accelerate had a tremendous year. I mean, to win the three big, the three big older horse races out there. And then win the Awesome again, and then win the Breeders' Cup Classic. Again, there was, you know, the horses he beat during the year in those three big races, you know, Dr. Door and those kind of horses, you know, were very questionable. So you have to take that into consideration. And the one thing that I find, listen, I can excuse, you know, the way races turn out or how tracks are. if horses come home slow. I'm finding it hard to get past the final quarter in 27.
Yeah.
And the final half in 52-1 on a day when they ran the mile in 133-4, 3/5 off the track record, and they ran the sprint in 108-1. And so I was at 27. I mean, that's literally trotting horse time. I mean, you just don't see horses coming home in 27. So you start thinking, well, I don't know what he beat here. I mean, Catholic Boy, you know, didn't run his race. McKenzie didn't run his race. Mind Your Biscuits didn't run his race. And listen, I had win bets on Gunavera and Thunder Snow, and at the eighth pole, I thought Thunder Snow was an absolute lock. I'll get back to that. I'll get back to European jockeys riding on the dirt. But I have no idea why. Yeah, Christophe Soumillon is one of my favorite riders. I think he's one of the best riders. Why he started hitting Thunder Snow right-handed over and over again, and have the horse duck to the rail. I mean, everybody was in the 3 or 4th pass on the dirt. Even City of Light, who broke from the rail, came out to the 4th pass going into the first turn and came home in the 4th pass. And they, you know, trying to keep him off the rail as much as possible. And as soon as Thunder Snow ducked to the rail, and he started swimming. I mean, I said, he had just gotten up to accelerate at that point. And I said, I think Thunder Snow's going to win this race. You know, and I had a win bet on him, and I had a win bet on Gunavera. And then he goes and just starts hitting him right-handed. It was like a reverse Swain when Frankie Dettori started hitting Swain left-handed, and he went out to the outside fence. But that was the last place I wanted to see him, was down that close to the rail. I mean, he literally was on top of the rail. So I did not want to see him down there. You know, I'm probably the only person that believes this, because I know everybody thinks completely opposite. But everybody is knocking the 3-year-old crop. And, granted, Catholic Boy ran poorly, you know, probably with an excuse. And, McKenzie ran poorly. McKenzie had one start in 8 months, okay? So they weren't Triple Crown horses. They did not run the Triple Crown. You start looking at the horses. I mean, first of all, I look at Good Magic, who finished second in the Derby. I mean, he did come back and ran a huge race in Haskell and then got hurt in the Travers, and that was it. But you start looking at the rest of these horses. Number one, I thought Audible ran an incredible race. I mean, granted, he was the best horse in the field. But to come back off that layoff, going 7 furlongs, and the acceleration he showed on the turn, he was on top of those horses so fast and blew by them so fast, and drew off like this horse is going to be a serious, serious 4-year-old. So I thought he ran a tremendous race. And nobody's talking about Bravazo. I mean, everybody's talking about a great race City of Light ran in 133.4. I mean, Bravazo runs third in that race. And I thought he ran a terrific race. You know, he's a horse that obviously ran a huge race in the Preakness. And then even Mendelssohn. You know, Mendelssohn goes out, again, 22 and change, 46, 110, and he gets to be 4 lengths. And that's my other thing with European riders. Ryan Moore is a tremendous, tremendous rider. But the European riders are not used to riding on the front end with top-class horses, especially on the dirt. Because in Europe, the majority, when you look at races like the Ark and King George and all these big races, the Derby, horses on the front end are usually pace setters. You know, Aidan O'Brien will run 5 horses, including a 200-to-1 shot that guns to the lead. So European riders are not used to raiding horses on the lead, because they like to raid them to come off the pace and get cover. So they don't usually put them on the lead. But, I mean, Ryan Moore showed in the Jockey Club Gold Cup, he can't even hold it. He can't control this horse. I mean, it was one thing winning the Dubai World Cup on a notoriously speed-favoring racetrack, and he just sent him out there. He's a very good horse. And the horses he beat in the UAE Derby, he was not exactly the horses he was facing in the Gold Cup and in the Breeders' Cup. So he goes out there in 45 and 109 in the Jockey Club Gold Cup. You got to start thinking, you know, I got to start looking for an American rider who can rate this horse on the lead. So once again, he goes out there, and he went way too fast. And when they went, when I saw 22 and change, 46 and 2 or whatever, 110, I figured if he asked me at that point to predict the final time of the race, knowing how fast they had run the dirt mile and the sprint, I'm going to guess they're going to run 2 minutes, 2 minutes and one, 2 minutes and two, something like that. Then they ran almost 2:03. You know, so they literally crawled home in that race. But he just went out there too fast again. But I think he acquitted himself very well. Even Frenzy Fire, he was too close to the pace. I don't know what he was doing running up there with the pace early. But he managed to finish fourth. I mean, all in all, the horses that ran in the Derby, you know, the Triple Crown horses, I thought they acquitted themselves, you know, fairly well, all things considered. So I'm not gonna knock this 3-year-old crop yet. So, listen, the thing I find interesting about Horse of the Year is that, you know, as you know, on the NTRA poll, Accelerate had taken over as, you know, having the most points like the last 4 weeks or so, 4 or 5 weeks. But Justify always had a big margin in first place votes. But a lot of people did not vote for Justify in the top 10 for whatever reason, whether it's the fact that they were only putting horses that were in training on there, which was one reason, or they were holding against them for retiring. I noticed, like, in the final poll, somebody had him, like, fifth or sixth. I mean, either you have him 1-2 or you don't have him anywhere if you don't, because he's not in training. But to have Justify fifth or sixth is ridiculous. But, again, I think next to the last poll, Justify was in front, had, like, you know, 30-something first-place votes to, like, 9 for Accelerate. So that to me is the telling thing, that he had more first place votes, even though Accelerate had more points. But in this final poll, it was 25-19 Accelerate. That was a huge shift. So I don't know if you go by that. I mean, a lot of these people that are on that poll are people that are voting. And, you know, if the tide is changing a little bit here, then we could see a very, very close race for Horse of the Year. And, you know, at one point I thought Accelerate really was not going to win because of the discrepancy in first place votes. But now that he has more first place votes off of this race, I got to figure a lot of people are going to vote for him. But it's awful hard not to vote the Triple Crown winner. I mean, there's something magical about that. You know, if you don't vote for it, you sort of take away from the Triple Crown a little bit. You say, wow, what's more than Triple Crown? Didn't get Horse of the Year. You know, it's just, I don't know. It's going to be a tough decision. I'm glad I don't vote anymore.
Well, and it's, you know, one of the things that I think there was a immediate, in the immediate aftermath of Saturday, and for a few days, it was like, oh, you know, this is really a classical, you know, set of PPs for a Horse of the Year. And, you know, the perception that, oh, you know, he's been running all year. Well, then when you sit down and look at him, you know, side by side, and I suppose if you took the dates off of it, you have to acknowledge that, you know, he didn't really run more than, you know, he ran what?
One more than.
Yeah, he ran 7 times, and Justify ran 6.
He won 5 grade ones, and Justify won 4.
Exactly, and
I think winning the 4 grade ones Justify did in such a compressed period of time,
right,
is actually more impressive than winning it over the course of the year. It's great, for, you know, from a soundness, stamina, toughness standpoint, that you can stay in training that long. But when you have those wins spread out, but to do what he did in 111 days. When, if you look at all the Triple Crown winners, they did the same thing. It took them 11 and a half months from the time they broke their maiden to the Belmont Stakes. The average amount of time between their career debut and the Belmont Stakes was 11 and a half months. And this horse did it in 111 days. So what he did was historic, and I don't know. I would probably lean, if I was voting, I would probably lean more towards Justify. Being a, quote, triple crown person myself, yet on the other hand, you want to reward the five-year-old for staying in training as a five-year-old.
Yep.
You know,
yep.
To encourage more people to do it, saying, here's a horse that was an average three-year-old, a good four-year-old, and a tremendous five-year-old. And, you know, and we've seen it. We've seen it, you know, in the past now. We saw it with California Chrome, you know, who won two legs in the Triple Crown, was a terrific three-year-old, but he was a much better five-year-old. So, you know, if it encourages people to keep horses in training, if they can get, I got a chance to get horse of the year as a five-year-old with this horse, because basically what we're doing now, we're retiring. It's like in other sports to retire a player retiring after he wins Rookie of the Year. You know, I mean, there's a whole career ahead of you. You know, granted, with a horse, you know, it's over, you know, 2 or 3 years, but that's an entire career. You just want to give these horses a chance to prove how great they are when we're not finding out anymore. We're never going to find out how. Well, listen, we started with Secretariat. All you could do is speculate how great he would have been as a 4-year-old. You could do it with American Pharoah, how great he would have been as a 4-year-old. You know, I mean, we saw how Gunrunner improved dramatically from 3 to 4 and then right into his 5-year-old. Campaign. So, I mean, listen, it's going to be a tough decision. I'd hate to see a Triple Crown winner not get Horse of the Year, especially what he accomplished. And I know a lot of people are not going to want to reward the connections for retiring him, because some people still believe that they just retired him. But we have to remember, by the way, when you ask a horse to do as much as he was asked to do, in such a short period of time. And people forget, too, by the way, he did come out of the Derby with a foot bruise. I mean, he was lame. Remember when they brought him out from the barn? And, you know, Baffert was shocked to see the horse walking lame. And he comes back anyway and wins the Preakness and the Belmont. So, I mean, it's a matter of time. When you ask a horse to do that much, that quickly, and he obviously, you know, had his issues as a 2-year-old, the fact that he didn't run,
right.
So it's just a matter of time of how many races you're going to get out of him. So it's very tough. It's hard to compare the two. It really is. I mean, you're talking two totally different types of horses and two totally different types of careers. And people are going to have to decide, you know, on their own belief on what, you know, what they believe is the right thing. I don't know. I think more so than who is the better horse.
Well, who had the, you know, who... No, it's not a question even. It's all based on your on what you value and what you know on the cumulative. And while I didn't think going into the Breeders' Cup we'd have to deal with this, because I did not expect Accelerate to win. I mean, I gave him a chance. I wasn't, you know, wasn't totally against them, and in fact, even, you know, explained in the analysis how he could win. The coming out, my initial reaction was, well, this has got to be considered, and you know, now a few more days removed, my pendulum is back in the. In the Justify camp, and
yeah, same with Mark.
Yeah,
let me ask you a question. By the way, I mean, you know, you study pace and everything like that. What did you make of coming home in 27? I mean, when was the last time you saw a horse come home in 27?
It was surprising when I did the splits, and in fact, I it's funny what you said earlier, because I said Chuck Simon, I said, did you see this? They came home in 27, and Chuck said exactly what you did, harness time, and
I mean, the last half from 46-2, and the last half from 52.
Yeah,
I mean, I mean, you just don't see that. I mean, like I said, listen, if the track was deep, and you can make an excuse that it was tiring at the end. They went a mile in 1:33.4, you know, on a one-turn mile, which, thank goodness, at least we saw what a horse it's supposed to do at a mile, how a one-turn mile separates the good horses from the pretenders. But it's not like they went the mile in 135 and changed.
Well,
it's the mile 133 and 4. And
Steve, did
sprinting 108 and 1. I mean,
well, did you,
Trek couldn't be that slow.
Well,
and
did you hear?
Got a 105 buyer. That's probably one of the lower Breeders' Cup Classic buyers, I would imagine.
Did you hear? It is only Drosselmeyer slower, 104.
Oh, really? Yeah. Oh, wow.
Did you hear? Did you listen to Paul Matisse the first hour?
I caught the last 15-20 minutes of it.
There's extensive pace conversation and not pace, but figure making conversation. Of course, Paul makes his own figures, and
I listened to Andy Beyer because I wanted to hear what he had to say about it. You know, and I totally understand. You know where that 119 came from with Stormy Liberal,
right? And that was Andy's major. Reason for visiting, but we talked about everything else. This discussion that we just had and that come home time, it does occur to me, to then reiterate what the track is doing. And that track, of course, is drying out all afternoon. And when you think about Monomoy Girl and the race before, you did have the two turn races with the Distaff and the Classic.
I did.
There's a case
race.
To be
Monomoy
made.
Monomoy Girl goes another eighth and 13-1. She wins the Classic.
Yeah.
I mean, I thought 149.3 was fairly respectable. I mean, because one thing I noticed about Churchill Downs is that the farther you go, the slower you go. I see that on Derby Day every year. I remember when they used to, early in the card on Derby Days, they'd run 108s and change. And then, when Ali Sheep won the Derby, they went like 108 and change, and he wound up going 203. It does slow down. But it's not the final time. It was the closing fractions.
Right.
That's what got me. Listen, 26, all right. I can, 27? I mean,
I know.
I just can't remember horses in a major race coming home that slow. I mean, I don't know what to make of it. I really don't. But 52-1 is just absolutely crawling. But I mean, Monomoy Girl. I thought 149.3 was fine. She she comes home 13-1, and she's right there.
Well, we're gonna have to table that and see how everybody comes back, and that's what Paul Matisse's conclusion was too, that he's grappling. I mean, and Paul is experienced as Beyer and Jerry Brown and everybody, and Jerry, anxious to see what Jerry's read is.
I heard you talking to him about how Jerry Brown hasn't come out with his figures yet.
Yeah, usually they're out by Wednesday, but or today. I mean, today wouldn't be extraordinarily late to come back.
Yeah.
Who knows what Jerry, how occupied he's been with other things. But they'll be out sooner than later, and it'll be interesting to see what Jerry's take on it is.
Because normally
opinion.
Almost like Accelerate, who's running in the four path, the whole race. Normally that would boost his number. But on that track, that's where you want it to be. So I don't know how you compute that. I mean, it's kind of difficult. I know, it's still ground loss, but nobody was on the rail. If you look in all the races, everybody was coming off the rail. So being in a four path, you really weren't that much farther wide than the horse on the far inside because they were off the rail.
Well, there were horses making up a lot of ground on the inside, as it happens. If that's what they chose to do, and that included Wildcat, when she came storming home too. And much like this whole scenario, two turns, you don't necessarily know how the inside is in the first turn and, right, and onto the backstretch as it is later on. I mean, this is why then and discussing this and bringing up the come home time, it really adds to, you know, how to what Paul was saying, how difficult a day it's going to be for the figure making, and we'll see how it, you know, how when everybody runs back, that's what you need.
Yeah. Hey, how about Antonio Sano? You know, he buys his horse for $16,000 and he's been warned over $4 million.
I mean, it's tremendous.
All the credit. I mean, Gunnavera, that's a great, you know, obviously Sano's story itself with the kidnapping is an amazing story. But, you know, to come here and buy a yearling for $16,000 and see him win over $4 million. And I think one person is not getting enough credit, by the way. Peter Miller, by the way, to win two Breeders' Cup races, and then come back and win with the same two horses the next year at a different racetrack on a different part of the country. You know, it's not like they were both at the same track or so, which would have been tremendous anyway. But to come back and repeat with both horses?
Yep. Amazing. It really is.
And like Andy Byers said, I mean, how many times do you see gaps of seven lengths between second and third place finishes in a 5.5 furlong race? You know, I thought that was interesting. And the thing I love to see too, by the way, was I you know, if you look back at the, you know, Pennsylvania's glory days, you know, with Smarty Jones, you know, who was Pennsylvania owned, bred and trained. And then the following year, you had Fleet Alex, who was Pennsylvania-owned, who came out of Delaware. And then, you know, it was great to see the two camps unite. And you got Smarty's trainer, and now Fleet Alex's owner come up and win a Breeders' Cup. I thought that was kind of cool.
Yeah, absolutely. Although Chuck wasn't there, Chuck couldn't be there. He had been
in Ireland playing golf.
Right.
I said you couldn't leave one day early because he texted me. He said I'm in Ireland. He said, oh, well, watch it here. He said that he was coming. I think he was coming back like that same day. I said you couldn't.
He
leave
did.
One
he
day
came.
Early, you know?
Yeah. No, he came back.
He was in Ireland. He was having a ball. He said he needed some time off and some distance and stuff. So which is fine. I'm sure he enjoyed watching it from there.
Steve, before we wrap, I imagine you'd had dealings over the years with Willard Thompson.
Well, you know, the funny thing is about Willard Thompson is that, you know, I covered the New Jersey racing for Thoroughbred Times going back to the 80s, and I've covered like almost 30 Haskells, and I'd go to Monmouth Park in the backstretch all the time. And, you know, I would follow all the trainers there. And, you know, he never had the big horse, so I never had, you know, close contact with him. But year after year after year, he just, you know, on that New Jersey circuit and just kept pounding out those horses, those good, you know, good, solid horses and wins races a year. And, you know, from the few times that I did meet him, he was a really, really nice guy. Yeah, I mean, he was, you know, he personified New Jersey racing. You know, the trainers behind the scenes that they go their whole career without having that one big horse, but they just keep plugging away and just keep having good solid horses year after year after year. I mean, you know, we're losing a lot of great horsemen recently.
Absolutely. Tony talked about it. Tony wrote for him too, and his name in the program for years. Willa Thompson. Well, Steve, I appreciate it, and the debate will certainly continue. This horse of the year, but
interesting the rest of the year.
Yep, exactly, and we still got plenty of racing. Some of those Cup winners and Cup horses will come back, including Seeking the Soul, who's going
to... Well, he goes to the Clark now,
the
so we're going to try and win that again. I mean, listen, we still got the Cigar Mile.
Yep.
And, like I said, it's unfortunate we missed Code of Honor, but we'll get to see him in the Remsen most likely. So we'll see how much of a Derby horse he looks like at the end of the year. Yeah, and I always look forward to the that weekend at Aqueduct, you know. And there's still some big races, a lot of big races in California left. So I still, you know, racing's not over by a long shot. There's still a lot of good, still a lot of good racing to go.
No doubt, Steve. I appreciate
race
it.
Is going to be the horse of the year. That's still going to be.
That's yeah.
Going to be, and Twitter's going to start getting nasty. It's going to have these Zenyatta Rachel Alexandra battles with people. Throwing darts at each other.
This is more the blame.
At some point.
This is the blame Zenyatta.
It shifts to that discussion.
Zenyatta,
right, exactly.
We'll see. Steve, I appreciate it.
Okay, Steve.
Good week. We'll talk next week. Let's take a break. Okay. Come right back and close it out. Got about 25 minutes. Kasel. See if we can't. We're late getting to Tony, but then we had to get Steve on time. So let's strategize. Back after this.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Vick on Sirius XM Radio.
Enjoy Daily Racing Form's best value with a multi-track PP pack. Get 5 full-card PPs featuring the day's best racing for only $6. Each DRF multi-track PP pack features full-card DRF pass performances for the top tracks you want to play. Handicapping articles and analysis, closer looks for key tracks, and selections by DRF handicappers. Daily packs and longer plans for all budgets are available. Download full-card PPs for 5 of today's top tracks. Visit drf.com/multi-track today.
Pennsylvania's breeding program is truly the most lucrative in North America. Now, we'll pay a 50% breeder award for PA-sired, PA-bred maidens who run first, second, or third, with 25% for non-PA-sired, PA-breds. Last year, the number of mares bred rose by 15% in Pennsylvania. And unlike some other states, our Racehorse Development Fund can only be used to support Pennsylvania breeding and racing. This is Brian Sanfratello. Please visit us at PABred.com.